I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Already a New York Times bestseller, Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking, is a wonderful book about the advantages that introverts have in a world that considers being an extrovert the basis and idea of success. We've grown up in a world where extroverts are lauded for their outgoing personalities, seen as more social, successful, or smarter. In this book, Susan Cain argues that introverts draw their own unique strength thanks to reflection, persistence, and sensitivity. It's a compelling book, and its author joins me now. Susan Cain has been on a whirlwind tour promoting this book. I'll ask her what that's been like, because despite being a former attorney in Wall Street, Ms. Cain is a self-proclaimed introvert. She's been on dozens of high-profile broadcasts already, and this past week gave a talk at TED. More than recounting her own experiences, Susan Cain also draws on significant research in the fields of neurobiology and psychology. She reflects on ideal workspaces. Do we go away from open office concepts? How should our classrooms be organized? There's just much to talk to Ms. Cain about. The book is published by Crown. Her website is at thepowerofintroverts.com. She joins me from her home in the Hudson River Valley. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Susan Cain. Ms. Cain, good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So the beginning of the book, at the start of the book, I should say, you dedicate the book to your childhood family. And in the back, there's a couple of pages on your grandfather. Just a wonderful remembrance of him, who he was, and what he was like. Can we start there? Do you mind talking about your grandfather and what you learned from him?
No, I love it. It's funny. No one has ever actually asked me that question in an interview, and I think it's a great question. So my grandfather was a rabbi, a really important person in my life. He was a very, very gentle person, very courtly person, and he was a person who really loved to read, and he had this apartment, a small apartment in Brooklyn where he lived alone. He had been a widower. And that apartment was my favorite place in the world, literally, when I was growing up, because, you know, it was kind of infused with his presence, and it was also just filled with books. And, you know, so it was this place where everything was about reading and about ideas. And my grandfather would sit and he would read these books day after day, and then take all the ideas that he had learned that week and give sermons to his congregation. You know, and I would watch him do this, and he was a quite quiet and shy person in a lot of ways, but his congregation really loved him, and it was interesting. You know, he to me was kind of the living embodiment of what I'm talking about in my book, because
yeah.
He was quiet and he was shy, but he was also, you know, he was incredibly empathic, and people could feel that in him, and he would take all his hours of reading and, you know, weave it into these fantastic sermons that people would come from all over to listen to. And so he really was kind of the embodiment of the different traits that I'm trying to talk about. You know, he wasn't the kind of bold, charismatic leader that we normally associate with sort of the beloved figure in a community. He contributed what he did through a very different constellation of qualities.
And when he died, the whole city came
over,
right?
Yeah, when he died, like the police literally had to close down the streets of his neighborhood because, I mean, the streets were they were crowded with people who had come to mourn him because they would never hear his sermons again or, you know, hear his gentle inquiries again about how they were doing. I kind of watched the arc of his life and I really tried to learn from it in my own way.
And so there's a lesson in here for all of us, isn't there? Through his life.
There's really a lesson in here for all of us, that there really are, there are a lot of different ways to contribute beyond the vision that is usually given to us of, you know, you should be the loudest or the most social or the most this or the most that. And one of the first things I did when I started my research, you know, I think bearing my grandfather's idea in mind, I really wanted to look at who are the people in recent history, in the 20th century, who are the people who have really contributed and who have really led us forward, and which of those were introverts and why? You know, and what I found all these people like Eleanor Roosevelt and Gandhi and Rosa Parks and you know, Charles Darwin and Steve Wozniak. Well, he was earlier on, but Steve Wozniak, people like this, who did what they did, they contributed what they did because of their quiet temperaments. You know, not in spite of those quiet temperaments, which is the story we're usually told, but because of them. You know, there really is something about being more quiet, being more gentle, being more thoughtful, having more comfort with solitude that is incredibly powerful. And I think that we undervalue this way of being to our collective peril.
So why do you think it is, or when was it, that our society here in North America, you're in the United States, I'm in Canada, that we sort of value or laud the qualities of the extrovert and sort of put down the introvert in a way?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, to some extent, this is part of the DNA of Western society, which, you know, has always favored sort of the oratory of the Greeks and the Romans, and you know, in countries like the United States, there's always been a favoring of the man of action over the man of contemplation. But until the turn of the 20th century, we did live in what historians call a culture of character, and that was a culture where we valued people for their inner worth and their moral rectitude. And, you know, we admired people for the good deeds that they performed when nobody was looking. And so this was a culture that was much more favorable to introverts because of its emphasis on the inner self. But then what happened was, in the 20th century, suddenly we were moving from an agricultural economy to really a world of big business, and people are moving from small towns into the cities, and now they are working alongside people. Instead of working alongside people they've known all their lives, now they have to go and they have to stand out at job interviews, and they have to sell their company's products. And so as a result, they start to admire these traits like magnetism and charisma, and that becomes really kind of the centerpiece of human achievement, or the way it's seen. And so that's a culture that historians call a culture of personality. And I would argue that we still very much live in this culture today, you know, in some ways more so than ever before, because now we have the advent of reality shows and political punditry that focuses not on thoughtful analysis, but rather on who can argue more loudly and more convincingly, you know, kind of on the fly.
Yeah, and our celebrity
and
culture.
So I'd really like to see us return to some of the values of the culture of character, which is not specifically an introvert-focused culture, but just one that I think returns us to deeper truths, and one in which introverts and extroverts can equally flourish.
Now, the terms introvert and extrovert, we've been using them already, but is shyness, is that the same thing as introversion?
No, it's a really important question. It's not. So shyness is about the fear of social judgment. Like, you know, you go for a job interview, are you paralyzed with terror over how you're going to be judged? Introversion is more about how you get your energy and how much stimulation, including social stimulation, you prefer. So introverts tend to feel that they're most alive and they're most jazzed up when they're in quieter environments, whereas extroverts really crave more stimulation of all kinds, including social stimulation. So there is some overlap between shyness and introversion. Psychologists debate to what degree. But there are certainly many introverted people who are not shy at all.
And is the
an example of that is somebody like a Bill Gates, mm-hmm. Who seems to be a quite sort of reserved, private, quieter person. But he doesn't appear to be fazed by other people's opinions of him.
Yeah.
So I'd give him as an example of a non-shy introvert.
Yeah. Did you find that introverts are satisfied more easily than, say, an extrovert? That they're more grateful, perhaps?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if they're more grateful. I haven't seen any data on that. I would say that they're more satisfied by their own company. I think they're probably less easily bored because they don't, as I was saying, they don't need as much incoming stimulation to make them feel good. So, you know, a simple night at home or a simple night reading a book or, you know, being with your best friend or with your spouse is enough for an introvert, where extroverts might feel the need much more to be going out. And that does have interesting implications for interpersonal relationships, because, you know, introverts tend to invest really deeply in the relationships that they have, because they don't enjoy so much, you know, the out and about with 100 people kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Whereas extroverts really do need to be kind of pushing the social boundaries to feel good.
So is it something that we're born with, or is it something that we just pick up, say, because of the people around us growing up?
Well, it can be both. It is considered the most heritable of all the personality traits, or among the most heritable.
Yeah.
So for many people, they really are born with a temperament that predisposes them either to shyness or introversion or extroversion. You know, there are some people who become this way through one way or the other, through their environmental influences. And, you know, of course, it can be, in most people's cases, a mishmash of the two. But the bottom line answer is, yeah, there really are a lot of babies who are born with a specific temperament. And so for the introverted temperament, you know, again, it's sensitivity to stimulation that's the key. So you can see, even in the youngest of babies, you can give babies, for example, sugar water to suck on, and the babies who are more likely to grow up introverted will suck more vigorously on the sugar water because they're more sensitive to that incoming bit of stimulation of the sugar. So this really plays out in all kinds of ways that have nothing to do with social life. You know, it's just stimulation in general.
Yeah. Now, I read somewhere that your husband, he's not an introvert, right?
Right, that's right. He's more of an extrovert.
So how did your kids end up?
Oh, well, you know, it might be a little too young to say in our kids, but I would say that with kids, one thing that is just, you know, the main thing to keep in mind is figuring out who your kids are and really honoring them for who they are, and taking delight in them. So it's not just a sense of, like, tolerating an introverted child, but more taking delight in who that child is. Because either way, whether they're introverts or extroverts, they tend to have unique views of the world that are delightful in very different ways. So an introverted child is often the one who's coming up with all kinds of, like, really deeply perceptive views of the world, or going off by themselves and coming up with some really great creative project that they've come up with. You know, different things like this.
In the neurobiology and the other scientific research that you encountered, did you find out if the introvert is perhaps different than the extrovert in terms of how they're wired, maybe?
Yeah, there are some really interesting differences. And one of the primary ones, you know, aside from the sensitivity to stimulation that I was talking about before, is that extroverts seem to have more active reward networks in their brains. So the reward network in your brain, it's the part of your brain that is most active when you are chasing after something that you want, you know, whether it's having a conversation with somebody who looks attractive or going after a new business deal, something like this. So extroverts seem to get more jazzed up when they have a reward in view, more so than introverts do. And that can obviously be a really positive thing because this is the kind of quality that makes you kind of seize the day and charge after something regardless of the obstacles in your path. Now, the downside of this is that when you are doing this, you're also much less likely to see any warning signals along the way. And so extroverts are known, therefore, to take many more risks than introverts, and they actually, kind of interesting research. They get into more accidents. They play in more extreme sports. They are even more promiscuous than introverts. It's a kind of risk-taking profile that's focused on kind of the jazzy payoffs of a reward. So the introverted style, it can be a little less glamorous, maybe a little. You know, I think that when extroverts are going after their awards, this seems to be accompanied by kind of a constellation of very happy emotions, you know, like joy and exuberance and excitement. And this is what makes extroverts often very delightful to be around. But the introverted style can be more careful, more circumspect. And a good example of this is somebody like a Warren Buffett, who's a self-described introvert and is very famous for having identified, you know, kind of the quirks in the financial markets and not fallen prey, as many other investors did, to the different bubbles that have come our way, you know, the tech bubble and the housing market bubble.
What about instances of introversion in men and women? Is there a difference?
Only a very slight one. There are, in men, introversion is slightly more common than it is in women, but the latest studies show that it's about 50-50 for both genders.
Yeah.
You know, I think what is different for men and women is how it plays out for them socially. So, you know, and that's kind of complicated. It's not a black and white thing. You know, in some ways, it's hard to be an introverted man because there are these cultural expectations that you be very bold and very dominant. On the other hand, there still is, at least to some degree, a kind of permission for a man to be more of a strong and silent type. So a man who can kind of, an introverted man who can fit himself into that particular mold can make social stereotypes work. Now, women, on the other hand, you know, culturally or historically, have had more permission to be, you know, more quiet, more demure. But this is changing, of course, in recent years. Now there's much more of an expectation that women, too, be very bold and very out there. So these things are really complicated.
Yeah. And how has the Internet and social media, how has that influenced, say, how introverts and extroverts react? I look at something like Facebook, for example, and I don't know what your experience is, but I see introverts and extroverts on there, and I see them participating in the sort of social media as it is on Facebook, sort of in unique ways, in different ways, but they still participate.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what the unique ways are that you have seen. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Facebook in particular, there have been some studies suggesting that it is a medium that is better suited to extroverts, or extroverts prefer it more.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can imagine if you think of Facebook as being a venue where you're kind of collecting large numbers of friends for everybody to see, and posting status updates quite often. But on the other hand, social media really has been an interesting phenomenon for introverts because, you know, of course, it's a way of connecting with large numbers of people without having that much stimulation coming at you.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of sitting quietly in your room at the same time that you're connecting. So we tend to think of social media as being this kind of fire hose of information that we're flooded with, but really there's another way to think of it, which is a way of, you know, what I was just saying before, a very quiet way of connecting. And in fact, the social media website Mashable ran a poll a couple of years ago where they asked their users if they were introverts or extroverts, and the majority of them were introverts, as is their CEO and founder, Pete Cashmore.
Hmm. Now, everyone seems to be talking about Jeremy Lin at the moment. And
it
made me think of some of the stuff in the book. There's a part in the book where you talk to Asian Americans about their experiences at school, that they felt alienated. And it made me think of, I guess, this idea that extroverts are sort of lauded. That's a largely American phenomenon, or North American phenomenon, I should say. Do you see sort of our ideals, our habits, permeating those of, say, Asian cultures, that where being sort of a show horse isn't something that's expected of people?
Yeah, I mean, it is starting to permeate, and I know this because there was this fascinating study that was done a while ago where they compared the Chinese and Canadian school children,
mm-hmm.
and they found that the shy children in China were seen, were respected and admired by their peers and seen as candidates for leadership positions, and in Canada it was just the reverse. But then they repeated the study more recently, and now the shy Chinese children were not doing as well as they once had, which, you know, suggests that mores are changing. But even if they are changing, you know, these things still run pretty deep. And I think it's interesting that you bring up Jeremy Lin, because one of the things that I found when I was I did my research in a largely Asian American community here in the U.S. is that, you know, a lot of the attributes that we tend, for better and for worse, to associate with Asian children, of being, you know, studying hard and doing well in school and these kinds of things, that they're related to a different understanding of personality type and a different understanding of what is cool and what is admirable. You know, so if you think it's okay to be quiet and studious and persistent and keep your head down and really focus, then you're much more likely to be Jeremy Lin and, you know, do well in school. And also, like, if you look at the way that he rose to prominence in basketball, you know, if you read the articles about him, he was going off by himself, you know, practicing his shots and working on his weightlifting and so on. And, you know, it took an enormous amount of kind of solitary discipline that he showed,
mm-hmm.
and that's very, very typical of these cultures, and it's also typical of a more introverted style of being. You know, the two things overlap. So I often think that because in the West, because we don't tend to admire people who have that set of traits, that can really prevent us from achieving certain levels of excellence, because you kind of need those traits, or at least need to know how to embody them to be disciplined enough to achieve the excellence.
Did you set out to write this book perhaps to learn about yourself and maybe validate your own introversion?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely, because, you know, I've been aware of kind of being a square peg in a round hole since I was a kid. You know, I didn't have a language for it when I was a child, mm-hmm. but I was pretty aware that the way I liked to spend my time was not considered the way kids were supposed to want to spend their time. You know, not within my family. I was really lucky. Within my family, it was very cool and acceptable to want to read and, you know, be by yourself doing creative stuff. But, you know, when I'd be in environments that were more like school and camp, I would see, you know, I had a preference for kind of socializing one-on-one and that kind of thing. And yet what I saw around me was that we were supposed to be in big, rowdy groups a lot of the time. And I just knew that wasn't, I couldn't really understand why that was considered so much fun.
And so what did you learn most about yourself having written this book?
I would say that I've really come to a place of like deep self-acceptance. So I don't really wrestle with those demons anymore the way I used to. You know, and it comes out in really small decisions of how am I going to spend my time on any given day. You know, I happily do what I need to do for the sake of work that I love or people that I love. This is something that I talk about in the book. The psychologist Brian Little, you know, talks about the need to kind of get outside yourself or your natural preferences for the sake of these higher goals. And so I do that quite readily, but I also honor my own needs without even having to think twice about it. I don't really have to push myself anymore. And, you know, it's funny, because I spoke at the TED conference last week and about introverts, and after that, everybody was coming up to me and saying, you know what, ever since I heard your talk, I now feel free to go back to my hotel room and take a break. And if I hadn't heard your talk, I would have felt the need to be kind of out here networking all day long. And they said that, you know, as a result, once they went back to their hotel room and took the break that they needed, they then had a lot more energy to socialize with people when they came out again. I think it's these small little things of permission that can go a long way.
Yeah, I saw the TED talk, and it was quite moving, I thought. And when the response you got after, I guess, the 20 minutes or so that you were talking, you got that standing ovation. I mean, that must have been pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. It was. You know, it's always great to know that you're reaching people in that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, even cooler than the response in the moment was the conversations that I had with individual people afterwards. You know, people were coming up to me all week and telling me their stories. And, you know, it was funny or just interesting to hear those stories in that particular context, because people would come up to me and, you know, tell me about their struggles with introversion and how it had been viewed by society. And then I would ask them what they did, and you know, they would say, oh, well, I'm the CEO of this company, or I'm the founder of that company. So it was all these incredibly accomplished people who had to struggle with these issues.
Did it
even they.
Sorry, did it surprise you that this book has touched the nerve that it has?
Not really. I mean, maybe at the beginning of my research it did, but I've been working on it for so long, since 2005. So I've been talking to people about it for a really long time, and so I know. By now I just know that there's almost no group of people who I tell this story to who isn't affected by it. You know, I've come to believe that this question of introversion and extroversion, that it's as profound a part of who we are as our gender. And so if you start talking to people about it, you know, you're talking about something that's really at the core of their identity. So no, I guess it doesn't surprise me anymore.
Yeah, the last part of the book, I mentioned already the remembrance of your grandfather, which is just wonderful to read. The last chapter, the conclusion of the book, it's a quite moving manifesto of what we should all do, whether we're introverts or whether we're extroverts. in terms of writing that, I guess that's what you really wanted to say with this book, right?
You wanted manifesto, you mean?
Yeah, you wanted us to, you know, embrace whatever it is that works for us, and as well not discount what doesn't work, and perhaps learn from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I saw so many models of that. You know, you were talking about my grandfather. It's also, you know, I look at my father, for example. He was, he just retired recently as a doctor. And he was a really great doctor. And part of the reason that he was so great is because he would come home every night from his practice, where he would spend these long hours at his practice. And then he would come home, and after dinner, he would sit for hours poring over his medical journals because he was really fascinated by all the latest research and felt kind of honor-bound to keep up with it. And he'd spend all this solo time, like, alone in study, reading this stuff. And as a result, you know, he really kept up with what was in his field, and he was really good at diagnosing people. So I kind of grew up with these examples all around me of people who were this way, and he wouldn't have been as good a doctor if he hadn't been that way, you know, if he had been... Like, there's so much of a focus now for doctors on, well, we should be recruiting medical students with great social skills. And it's not to say that social skills don't matter, but I feel like there's this other set of traits that are so, so important that aren't being properly valued. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to do with the book.
Yeah, indeed. And you've given those of us that are introverts a language, I guess. And so congratulations on that. I've really enjoyed this book, and I appreciate your time today, and congratulations on all the success that's deserved for this book.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. The website for more, thepowerofintroverts.com. The book is called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. It's published by Crown. Susan Cain on the line from New York in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Flanta.